Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody. This is Kathy Frey from Motherwise. And welcome to another webinar. And this one is particularly talking about when you get to that 30, 31, 32 week gestation. And what do you need to be doing at this time? What do you need to be ticking off your list? Well, there's actually quite a bunch of things. So maybe just get your pen and paper ready, whether you are watching me on webinar or listening to me on podcast. Okay, so the first thing is I would recommend that you will have by now completed the online questionnaire at kathyfrey.com. It's in that top right-hand corner because it's just 12 really simple self-check questions. They're completely anonymous for you to just really make sure of the different topics that you are feeling quite confident with and the different topics that, oh, actually, these are things you're not that familiar with that you need to realize you've got more education to do. So step one, do the questionnaire. Step two, download my free organic birth and understanding of natural labor and normal birth. So this is a guide that you can go onto my website and just, it's a free download, and this will become your, hopefully, your Bible when you're actually got labor contractions starting. So get yourself a hold of a copy of that. So the free organic birth, labor and birth download. Okay. It's just on the homepage on my website at kathyfrey.com. Next step, I would strongly recommend, obviously I'm very biased in my opinion here, but I'm allowed to be, I strongly recommend that you read the labor and birth chapter in the book, Oh Baby, Birth, Babies and Motherhood Uncensored, which of course is my book that's been a bestseller since 2005. So I've just poured my heart into the chapter there, and it's such a good reference. I would recommend that your partner and yourself have read the chapter at least twice. And then, but the reason that you still want to have that organic birth download is because you can't really refer to a whole big chapter when you're in labor. You want like a little summary of it. You want a dot point list. And that's what the guide is really great for doing. Okay, step four. So one, questionnaire, two, the download, three, read the chapter. Number four, watch my 1.5 hour video called Organic Birth. Now, this is where I pour my heart out to you. Not quite, more just give you all those gems of information that I have accumulated over the years of being a midwife with hundreds of births. 1.5 hour video. If you're not sure how to get hold of a copy, like you should be able to find it on my website. But if you're not sure, just drop us an email, kathy@kathyfrey.com, and we can point you in the right direction. No problem at all. Number five, fully understand hypnobirthing, which is, you could really just call it meditative labor. It's nothing new. It's what women have been doing for tens of thousands of millions of years, and yeah, meditative labor. So do you have to go and pay a whole lot of money and go to a course just on hypnobirthing? I think that if you are financially comfortable and you've never done any kind of form of meditation in your life, then that's probably a really good thing to do. If money's a bit tight, or if you are financially comfortable, if money's a bit tight, or you are very comfortable with the idea of doing meditation, then you probably can actually do this on your own. The main thing is to practice meditating. So I recommend from at least 32 weeks onwards, or preferably 30, 31 weeks onwards, once or twice a day for 20 minutes, you center down and meditate. Now, meditation, I know if you've never done it before, you know, you kind of think, oh, I can't stop my brain, you know, going off in all different directions. Well, we're all like that. That's totally normal in meditation. Okay, so all you want to do is maybe like download an app that's got some nice sounds on it, you know, like some waves or a waterfall. And you can also use a ticking clock sound. And then I actually like to, personally, when I meditate, I like to overlap a ticking clock on top of waves. That's my favorite zone. In fact, I can honestly tell you that I've just come from meditating before I was recording this. Gave myself a little 15 minute out, zen into my little zen mode. Maybe it shows. Anyway, so that's what you want to do, is just, and it's about finding your center. And it's, look, it's really simple. It's not hard. Every time you feel your brain starting to yabber away, just shut it down and focus back on that ticking clock or that metronome or whatever it is, the sound that you are using. Even just the hum of like an air conditioning unit can be pretty jolly good. But the reason that you are wanting to do this is because you need to get to that place when you're having labor contractions. You need to get into your zen mode during the rush or pain of the contraction. So there we are. What's next? That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, number 6. Have already sorted with your naturopath, medical herbalist, or homeopath your partus preparatus, which is your medicinal herbal medicine or homeopathic tinctures or whatever it is that you're using, Ayurvedic, traditional Chinese medicine. I don't really care. They're all fantastic. But make sure that you've got that already in place. You know what you're getting. You know when you're starting it. You've seen a very, you know, highly skilled professional who knows what they're talking about. And because these can make fantastic, incredible differences to how long a woman's cervix takes to dilate and how efficient her whole womb contraction is and the resulting cervical dilatation. And at the end of the day, the quicker and more efficient your labor is, the less chance there's going to be any trauma to it or any complications with it. So this is something you want to do. It's the best thing to do for your baby. And just make sure you're dealing with a health professional with that advice. Don't look that one up yourself. Get good advice. Okay, next one, birth plan specifics. So make sure that you've got jotted down your wish list on your birth. Well, no, actually, let's rephrase that. Make sure you've got your specific do's and don'ts on your birth list. Now, what we are not talking about is saying things like pre-planning how the whole labor will go. And saying like, I will not birth in this position. No, we're not. Who knows what position your body's going to want to birth in? Nobody knows that. But no, it's more about those consent decision points that need to be made at some point. Is your baby having vitamin K? And if so, is it oral or is it injection? Are you keeping the placenta or are you wanting the hospital to cremate it with all the rest of their hospital garbage? But as a midwife, we don't see it as garbage, by the way. We like to bury them, or a lot of women these days get them encapsulated. So all those sorts of things, have those written down, those decision points of what you're doing there. Okay, there's also, by the way, maybe a time where your healthcare provider, midwife or obstetrician, may be suggesting another growth scan. They really generally are only required if there's a reason. Although, now, the saying used to be that we don't know if radiography ultrasound scans are safe or unsafe on baby. We had no evidence either way, but there is mounting evidence that they are possibly unsafe. But of course, we don't really know all this, the ramifications. You know, we've got to wait till these kids grow up that have had all these scans. And, you know, they're in their 50s and are they all suddenly coming down with some level of cancer or something? We don't know. But at the same time, scans can have significant impacts on picking up abnormalities or anything of concern. So the golden rule I would say, if you're not sure, is, you know, the fewer the scans, the better. And there should be a good reason to scan. A good reason to scan would be to do one around about that 20 weeks and have that anatomical scan. It's a good reason to know that anatomically the baby is looking completely normal. And so that if it's not, you know, a plan can be put in place for that management. It's also very good to know where the placenta has implanted. because if that placenta is what we call over the os, if it's placenta previa, blocking the exit, well, you want to know that stuff. And that's where scans can be invaluable. But routine scans, just for no particular reason, except that the, you know, there wants to be a very rough guesstimate on the way to the baby, which, by the way, can be incredibly inaccurate. They're only a rough guide. Yeah, well, you know, I think this should be at 30-32 weeks if you're abdominally with your palpations, if everything feels good with the midwife and it's measuring well and we can feel that there's a good amount of water around the baby, not too much, not too little, and midwives and obstetricians should generally be very skilled at that. Although on saying that, some of them start to lose that skill when they rely more and more and more on ultrasounds. However, if you have got something like a high BMI, so it makes it a little bit more difficult to accurately feel that baby with our hands, or if you are a smoker, which is putting your baby at risk of a growth retardation, or if you've got gestational diabetes, or if there's other things going on, there could be a risk factor that means it could be a good idea to have a scan. Okay, so those are those to-do lists. And why you need to be getting onto all of these things at this stage is because, well, heck, you know, at any time now, you can go into labor. It's true. It can happen. 1 in 20 come early. And although I've never actually seen a statistic on the most popular time that a baby chooses to be born prematurely, I would have to say, in my experience, kind of 34, 35 weeks is a popular time. So you really want to get onto these things. Now I'm going to give you, in the last sort of remaining 10 minutes here or so, I'm going to give you 10 more things that you need to know about. Okay. Firstly, you need to know about the stages of childbirth. And that is that there's basically four stages: labor, birth, afterbirth, which is a placenta, and the fourth stage, which is kind of this amazing bubble of beautiful time of specialness after a baby is born for the first hour or two, which is incredibly precious and can be very destroyed. Imagine a bubble bursting with too much texting and too many visitors. So just really look after that first hour or two. It's very precious time. As your baby, you know, does that whole transition from intrauterine to extrauterine. Plus, you know, it can sometimes take 1 or 2 hours for the placenta to be birthed and some perineal suturing to be done and baby to be have its examination and have some wonderful skin-to-skin time and have had its first breastfeed. So there's actually still a lot going on. So just, you know, hold back telling the whole world that you just had your baby. You know, just give that first precious, you know, 1 or 2 hours to you and your baby and your partner. So go back to those stages of labor, stages of childbirth. So labor, birth, afterbirth, and then that first precious time. The afterbirth obviously is the placenta, the labor and birth. That is why you will often hear midwives talk about labor and birth, because they're two separate stages. The labor is the effacement and dilatation or shortening and opening of the cervix, and the birth is once you're fully dilated and you're pushing out the baby. The labor of that shortening and opening or effacing and dilatation of the cervix, the labor has three phases, which are the latent phase, active phase, and the advanced active or transitional phase. And all of these things you need to know. And that the best way to get that information, in my obviously biased opinion, is to read my book and watch my video. Okay, so that was number one. Number two, you need to sort of be familiar with the natural pain relief options that are available to you. So again, I go into more detail about this on the video, but in general terms, you've got complementary therapies, things like homeopathy and rescue remedy, absolutely, the bark flower rescue remedy, that's always a must have. TENS, transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation machine that you can hire, or some people just buy them because they're not that expensive and they just keep them at home for other uses. And obviously hydrotherapy, which is water. So that's being in a shower, being in a birth pool. But actually, whether you birth underwater, there is quite a lot of confusion about birthing pools, because they're actually probably better named laboring pools. We all know that there's really no argument. The jury completely agrees that with a normal, spontaneous, low risk, uncomplicated labour, that being in a pool can be very helpful. But particularly once you get past around sort of 7 centimetres dilatated or so. There is some research that shows that getting into the pool before that can sometimes actually lengthen the time of the labour because of getting the cervix rather waterlogged. But particularly, you know, once you get past that 7 or 8 centimetre, and a fantastic thing to savour and hold on to getting into that pool for when you're getting into the really toughest parts of the labour. And now whether you choose to stay on in the pool to actually give birth with the baby arriving under the water is another topic, and that may or may not be something that you wish to do. Or it may not be something that's advisable in your particular circumstance, especially if you've got maybe a very large baby on board. Anyway, that's another little topic that we can talk about on another day. But just you need to start to get familiar with this information yourself, and certainly there's a lot of details in my book. Number three, pharmaceutical pain management. So we're talking about laughing gas, pethidine or other opioids that are used, and of course, epidurals. A lot of them very detailed conversations on all of those, which again, I go into a lot more detail in my labor and birth video. We'll see how we go for time on that, and we might come back to that topic today. But I just want you to know this is information that you need to be starting to get familiar with. Okay, number four, the birth environment. It's important that you get cocooned, basically, when you are a laboring woman. So it is absolutely possible for the most sterile of and plain of hospital rooms to be turned into something that's very cocooning. And I certainly pride myself as a midwife that there's a lot I could do to a pretty sterile looking room and make it feel a whole lot nicer. Things like dimming the lights, making sure the curtains are pulled across, having some aromatherapy going, obviously using an electric aromatherapy machine. You can't use candles near oxygen, and there's always oxygen flowing in a hospital, so you can't do that. Or in birth centres. Yeah, so aromatherapy, some nice music going on. You know, I've even like taken the whole mattress off the bed and put it on the floor. So there's lots of things that can be done that way. But thinking about what is going to occur in that birthing environment so that you can have it feeling very holistic, calm, and cocooning. Then what else? Mobilization. So that's knowing that you being familiar with the fact about the advantages of mobilization within your labor, particularly leaning forward. Pretty much the worst position you can be on at all within a labor is lying back in a bed on your back. Probably the only position that would be worse than that when you're in a labor for the assisting of getting your cervix to dilate with the power of your baby's head pushing on that cervix. So pretty much the worst position after lying on your back on a bed would be hanging you upside down by your feet. So obviously we don't do that, and we shouldn't really have you lying on your back. If you need to lie down, lie on your side. You know, put yourself in that kind of resting position, that, you know, put a pillow between your legs and get right over on your side. Particularly your left side's always very helpful for getting a baby lined up well and its head flexed well, ready for birth. And make sure that your support people are sorted. Sometimes if your main support person is a person who has never ever attended a birth and never themselves given birth, which is typically what a first-time daddy-to-be is, then you may want to choose, unless he's incredibly motivated and sensitive and really into this whole birthing thing, and you know he's going to be amazing probably on the day because he's so focused and he's so into finding out information and getting to know what his job's going to be. If he's not showing all those kinds of signs, then, or you just plain know that he might be a little bit too reserved and not really practical on how things like helping you up to the toilet, getting you a drink, knowing that you are the center of his universe at that time and won't be, you know, popping outside for a cigarette every hour. You know, think about the idea that it could be not so silly to have another birth support person along. And ideally, they will be somebody who is not anxious in their nature and somebody who has themselves given birth naturally, so that they are the best people to have along. Other bits and pieces. Now, when to call a midwife, you need to discuss that with your carer, or when to be turning up at the hospital. But there are red flags of obstetric concerns that you should know about and be familiar with, and you should have a list of these. And then otherwise, in general, if everything else is going swimmingly well, generally you are not regarded as being established into active labour until you are having 3 to 4 contractions every 10 minutes that are over a minute long that you can't talk through. So, and it can take, you know, a while to get to that point. If you do transfer yourself, decide when you're having, say, a contraction, a 45 second contraction every 3 or 4, every 4 minutes or 5 minutes, and you think, oh, I better get in, you just have quite a good chance, really, of just being sent home, depending on how busy birthing speed is and how staunch that charge midwife is. Yeah, so the whole, you know, golden rule, we are talking about first babies here, by the way. It is different with seconds and subsequents, and it is different with women with any kind of obstetric complications. But in general terms, it's 3 to 4 contractions every 10 minutes, all over a minute long. And I would recommend that you sort of hang at home generally in it for about another hour or so of making sure that that's well established, so that when you hop in the car, the adrenaline of getting into that car doesn't dial down your contractions. Because otherwise what happens is you arrive at birthing suite and you're kind of like, well, I was having strong contractions, and they usually will send you home to what they call properly established into active labour. Because once you're in active labour, pretty much nothing will stop it and those contractions will keep coming. All right, and a few more things just to whiz through. Be aware of any of like the hospital protocols, like which door do you go into, what happens after hours, things like that. You should have had already a bit of a good education on what inductions are about, if that is something that you need to know about, what augmentations of labours are about, and what are the indicators for that, because that should not be done unless there's indicators. I would recommend, as I say, practicing the hypnobirthing. The commonest complications, people are always obviously worried about what can go wrong in labour and birth. The commonest complications, which are not bells and whistles emergencies, these are really just tend to be things where people go, okay, this is not working. And they are called emergency cesareans or emergency instrumental deliveries, but they're not emergencies as in bells and whistles. There's not that many times it's a really big emergency. I can think of one in my own practice in about 5 years of hundreds of clients. Although most of my clients have higher levels of normal birth, so that's probably helping as well. Okay, failure to dilate, failure for the baby to descend, or fetal distress. And the fetal distress virtually always is related to a long labour that has been prolonged because of an epidural. Epidurals prolong labours. And there's a time and a place for an epidural, but there are times it's medically indicated, but there's a lot of them going on board that are causing a lot of failure to dilate, failure to progress and descent, and subsequent instrumental and surgical deliveries. And because of the additional hours and hours that baby is in labour as the consequence of the epidural, then that's why we get so the fetal distresses as well. But when it's a spontaneous, natural, normal birth in a happy, healthy woman, incredibly rare to come across fetal distress. And then the only other thing was just to, you need to know what to do if your waters rupture. It's not a bells and whistles emergency, but just ask the question, what do I do at that point? And make sure you know. And there is one which you should be getting explained to you, which is if there is meconium in the water. So if your waters are a greeny or brown colour, then that means your baby has had a poo. If it's before 40 weeks, that's a little unusual. A little bit of a red flag that at some point in time that baby was a bit distressed over something. And it's a very valid reason to go into the hospital. It doesn't mean that the baby's in terrible distress right at that moment, but it is a point of getting checked out. And if you see meconium when the baby's sort of more like 40, 41 weeks, again, it needs to be assessed. But it's way more common at that point just because it's a more mature baby who just happens to have had its first bowel movement. But it still is a reason to get checked out. And so that's everything I wanted to go over today. And I just want to wish you all the most wonderful, wonderful rest of your pregnancy, a fantastic birth. And don't hesitate to drop a message on the feeds. And we're here to help at Motherwise. Okay, love you all. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. KathyFrey.com.